Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's Silvercrest second quarter earnings call. Before we begin, let me remind you that during today's call, Silvercrest will make forward-looking statements pursuant to the Safe Harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. All statements other than statements of historical fact, including statements regarding future events and developments in Silvercrest's future performance, as well as management's current expectations, beliefs, plans, estimates, or projections relating to the future are forward-looking statements. These forward-looking statements are only predictions based on current expectations and projections about future events. These forward-looking statements are subject to a number of risks and uncertainties, and there are important factors that could cause actual results, level of activity, performance, or achievements to differ materially the statements made. Among these factors are fluctuations in quarterly and annual results, incurrence of net losses, adverse effects of management focusing on implementation of a growth strategy, failure to develop and maintain the Silvercrest brand, and other factors disclosed in the company's filings with the SEC, including those factors listed under the caption entitled Risk Factors in a company's annual report on Form 10-K for the year ended December 31, 2014, filed with the SEC. In some cases, these statements can be identified by forward-looking words such as believe, expect, anticipate, plan, estimate, likely, may, will, could, continue, project, predict, goal, the negative or plural of these words, and other similar expressions. These forward-looking statements are predictions based on Silvercrest's current expectations and its projections about future events. All forward-looking statements made on this call are made as of a date hereof, and Silvercrest assumes no obligation to update these forward-looking statements. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during this conference, please press the star, then the zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded, and I would like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Richard Huff. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much, and welcome to our second quarter 2015 earnings call. Silvercrest substantially and organically grew our net new assets for the second quarter, ended June 30th, 2015, including nearly $0.5 billion in new client accounts, along with increased revenue, earnings, and maintained margins. The second quarter represented our eighth straight quarter of positive organic growth for Silvercrest, generated by both new ultra-high net worth and institutional business, including new institutional sub-advisory relationships. We're extraordinarily proud of this organic growth since the second quarter normally includes significant outflows for client tax payments. Silvercrest also successfully closed its acquisition of assets from Jamison Eaton and Wick, enhancing our greater New York presence, adding approximately $0.7 billion in discretionary assets and a significant non-discretionary institutional relationship advising on multi-billions, as well as valued new colleagues. Our total assets under management increased to $19 billion at June 30, 2015, from $18.2 billion as of March 31, 2015, and $16.7 billion as of June 30, 2014. Of that total, discretionary assets under management grew to $12.6 billion as of June 30, 2015, from $11.8 billion as of March 31, 2015. An increase of approximately 7%. We're pleased with the execution of the firm's business strategy, including consistent, strong organic growth, new institutional sub-advisory relationships, a successful acquisition, and increased visibility of the firm's prestigious brand. In August, the company's board of directors declared a quarterly dividend of 12 cents per share of Class A common stock. The dividend will be paid on or about September 18, 2015, to shareholders of record as of those at close of business on September 11, 2015. With that, I'll turn it over to Scott Girard, our CFO, for financial comments, and then we'll be taking questions. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rick. As you may have read in our earnings release again for the second quarter, discretionary AUM as of June 30, 2015 was $12.6 billion, and total AUM as of June 30, 2015 was $19 billion. Again, included in our AUM as of June 30, 2015 is approximately $0.7 billion of AUM acquired as part of our recent acquisition of certain assets of Jamison Eaton and Wood. Revenue for the quarter was $18.5 million, and reported consolidated net income for the quarter was $3.3 million. Delving a little bit further into Q2 of this year versus last year, again, revenue for the second quarter was $18.5 million, representing approximately an 8% increase over revenue of $17.2 million for the same period last year. This increase was driven primarily by growth in our management and advisory fees as a result of increased AUM. Expenses for the second quarter were $13.9 million, representing approximately a 7% increase from expenses of $13 million for the same period last year. This increase was primarily attributable to increases in compensation and benefits expense of $0.7 million and an increase in G&A expense of $0.3 million. Compensation grew primarily because of an increase to the accrual for partner and bonuses, and G&A increased primarily because of increased professional fees and investment research costs. Reported consolidated net income was $3.3 million for the quarter as compared to $2.8 million in the same period last year. Reported net income attributable to Silvercrest or to Class A shareholders for the second quarter of this year was $1.7 million, or 22 cents per basic and diluted Class A share. Adjusted EBITDA, which we define as EBITDA without giving effect to equity-based compensation expense and non-recurring items, was approximately $5.4 million, or 28.9% of revenue for the quarter, compared to $5.1 million, or 29.7% of revenue for the same period last year. Adjusted net income, which we define as net income without giving effect to non-recurring items, and income tax expense, assuming a corporate rate of 40%, was $2.9 million for the quarter, or 23 cents per adjusted basic and diluted share. Adjusted earnings per share is equal to adjusted net income divided by the actual Class A and Class B shares outstanding as of the end of the reporting period for basic adjusted EPS, and to the extent dilutive, we add unvested deferred equity units and performance units to the total shares outstanding to compute diluted adjusted EPS. Looking at the first half of this year compared to the first half last year, revenue was $36 million, representing approximately a 6% increase over revenue of $33.9 million for the same period last year. Again, this was primarily driven by growth in management and advisory fees revenue as a result of increased AUM. Expenses for the first half were $27.2 million, representing approximately a 5% increase from expenses of $25.9 million for the same period last year. Again, this increase was primarily attributable to increases in compensation benefits expense of $0.7 million and G&A of $0.6 million. Compensation, again, went up because of an increase to partner incentive bonus accrual, and G&A increases were driven by both professional fees and investment research costs. Reported consolidated net income was $6.1 million for the first half as compared to $5 million in the same period last year. And reported net income attributable to the Class A shareholders for the first half of this year was $3.1 million, or 40 cents per basic and diluted Class A share. Adjusted EBITDA for the first half of this year was approximately $10.3 million, or 28.7% of revenue for the first half, and that compared to $10.1 million or 29.7% of revenue for the same period last year. Adjusted net income for the first half was $5.5 million or 43 cents per adjusted basic and diluted share. And again, adjusted earnings per share takes adjusted net income and divides by actual Class A and Class B shares outstanding for basic adjusted EPS, and for diluted adjusted EPS, we add any unvested deferred equity units or performance units. Little bit of detail about the Jamison acquisition. So we closed the deal on June 30th. In consideration for the purchase assets and goodwill at closing, we made cash payments in the aggregate amount of approximately $3.6 million. We issued promissory notes totaling approximately $2.2 million, and we issued Class B units with a value equal to approximately $3.6 million. Total deal consideration over time includes contingent consideration in a form of an annual cash earnout, which will be based on 20% of the EBITDA attributable to the business and assets of Jamieson for the first 5 years after the closing of the deal. Looking at the balance sheet, total assets were $96.4 million as of June 30th, compared to $99.7 million as of December 31st of last year. Cash and cash equivalents were $19.1 million at June, compared to $30.8 million at the end of last year. Notes payable was $6.2 million as of June 30th and $4.1 million as of December 31st last year. And as of June 30th this year, total stockholders' equity was $44.9 million. That concludes my remarks. I'll turn it back over to Rick, who will transfer it over to Q&A.
Thank you very much, Scott. We're ready for questions at this time. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the star, then the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. One moment for our first question, please. Our first question comes from Steven Schwartz with Raymond James.
Hey,
good morning,
Steven. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
A few on just the institutional flow. You suggested that $500 million came from a client. How much of that was institutional?
We had new business coming into the institutions of $358 million. So it was a very good institutional quarter. If you reverse out the Jamieson acquisition, obviously that's not organic but acquired assets, that means that we had almost $100 million in new high net worth clients in the quarter. That's the initial funding of accounts, not total flows. That's just day one when they become a new relationship. Let's call it that. It's $100 million in new business, which is quite strong as well. What pleased us most about this quarter, Stephen, is that the second quarter is often significantly a negative one in our history. Not always. It was, I believe, positive last year as well. But the negative outflows for taxes substantially, can depress that quarter. It's expected as just part of the business. But it was the tax outflow this year was very high. And so to overcome that by both the high net worth side and the institutional was really key to us. The reason taxes were so high this year is because it was expected, is due to capital gains. So the good news is we did very well on behalf of our clients. The bad news is we eventually have to pay taxes.
That's the way it works. Can you talk about the flesh out your mention of institutional sub-advisory? What's that? What's going on there?
Well, I think we announced in both our third quarter calls and since of last year that we were actively seeking not just directed mandates and for managing a set pool of assets or becoming part of a set pool of assets, but we were seeking sub-advisory relationships with institutions that might have a growing pool of assets. That is to say, a pool of assets that's either being marketed or is linked directly to a retirement and an annuity-type business that would have growing assets. And we have two new relationships in the quarter that represented wins in that area, which is somewhat new for Silvercrest. So that was the achievement of a goal that we had for a business that isn't just winning a mandate but can expand.
Okay. Was any of that funded?
Yes, it was funded.
Okay.
Yes, those nice flows you see are as a result of some of that funding.
Okay, great. And then just a couple on Jamieson for Scott. Scott, what's the rate on the Jamieson notes?
The rate, 5%.
Okay, and the earn-out, that just goes into that capitalizes goodwill or something like that?
Yeah, that what happens is you do a fair value calculation as of the date of closing, so that came out to about $1.4 million. And then that gets trued up through the P&L in subsequent years as the earnouts crystallize.
Okay, so it goes through income. All right, that's what I...
Yeah, it has to go through your income. That's based on new accounting standards effective in 2009. That changed.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys. I'll get back in queue.
Sure. Okay. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star, then the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our next question comes from Michael Kim with Sandler O'Neill.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. First, just can you quantify the two new sub-advisory mandates that funded during the quarter, and then any color on sort of the relative economics of those wins versus either the institutional business or sort of the franchise more broadly?
Let me see if I've got those flows. We usually don't get quite this granular. I'm not sure I've got it as granular as you want it, so I'll follow up with that, and if you want to publish it so it becomes public, that would be fine. I just have the aggregate numbers, so I don't have each of those split out, sorry to say. I will tell you that the fee rates is consistent with our institutional business all along, and our high net worth business, as you know, is working with clients significant enough to essentially get institutional pricing. There isn't much disparity there. So you won't see movement in particular downward as a result of winning larger institutional business. It's going to be consistent on a fee basis with our business overall. So using those aggregate numbers should give you a good idea of revenue run rates.
Got it. Okay. And then any update on sort of the institutional pipeline? I think last quarter you highlighted $1.4 billion of searches that you felt were actionable. So just curious, any mandates that may have funded in the second quarter, and then any color on the pipeline or the outlook going forward?
If I recall, Michael, I may have used that number for our fourth quarter review in talking about the pipeline for the coming year. And then I believe in the last call I emphasized that our pipeline looked similar. if I gave a number, it would have been around that. I think I tried to stay away from a number because it moves around quite a bit. I will say that the actionable pipeline, which I call the defined pool of opportunities we have for a completed RFP or where we're a semi-finalist or finalist within, say, let's say 6 months, something like that. That's generally the timeline we're going to know, remains quite robust. Do keep in mind when I gave you that much larger number, the $1.4 billion, that we just had $360 million in new client assets on the institutional side flow in. So that's a very nice chunk. And obviously, we're refilling the till all the time, but that was an outlook for an extended period of time. It wasn't necessarily 6 months when I gave you that. So it remains robust. We're still looking at sub-advisory relationships. The overall search environment has slowed, just in general in the industry. But the invitation-only model for manager searches that we see in the business continues to be pretty active for the kind of strategies that we have. So we're optimistic about the continued growth in that business.
Okay, and then just finally, any update on sort of the plans to grant equity awards and how that might impact compensation expense and margins as we look ahead?
Right. So as we had forecasted for the last two quarterly calls, we felt it was important to give out those equity plans just as a point of review for people who may be new to joining us. We had set aside a meaningful equity incentive for the partners here. We felt we had to accomplish some good things with the company before those could be given out. And given the fact that we went public 2 years ago, we have substantially grown the institutional business. We have continued the strong organic growth in our high net worth business. We successfully completed an acquisition. We successfully hired a new team that's been contributing assets and growing our Virginia presence. And finally, our brand is significantly more visible. Having achieved those things, which we told shareholders we would, we felt it was time to reward our partners. And so we were looking to reward about 60% of the available pool. which is about, in round numbers, about 1 million shares to vest over 4 years. At the last call, we said that those awards would be imminent. Those awards were made yesterday with a valuation as of the closing price for the stock on Wednesday, which I believe was $13.23.
Correct. Class B, the grants were made that will vest in Class B units. That's what was granted this past
year. So that was disclosed in our filings to the 10Q yesterday?
Yeah, subsequent event.
And I believe at the time we were talking about doing it, the stock was around, we'll call it $16 in round numbers. So the hit to the P&L is $3 per share less than we would have expected at that time, which is good. And in terms of earnings, Scott, I'll leave that to you, but I believe it's, what, on an annual basis, close to 4 cents?
Right, yeah. If you base that on, you know, adding in the incremental shares that were granted, which was, you know, what was granted this week was about 967,000 shares. So that's the impact. That'll vest evenly over 4 years, and they are equity settled awards, therefore the expense burden is locked in at the closing price on Wednesday.
Michael, just the final part of your question was, what does that do to compensation? We have targeted for the business around a 55% total cash compensation ratio. You know, we hover around that 55, 56, 57, 55, somewhere in that range. This moves it closer to 60% in total comp.
And just to make sure I heard you correctly, you said the incremental expense related to the equity grants, the dilution is 4 cents. Is that
per quarter?
Per quarter. Got it. Okay, that makes more sense. Okay, thanks for taking my question.
On an adjusted diluted EPS basis.
Right, adjusted diluted EPS.
Yep. Got it.
Okay. Thank you, Michael.
Again, if you have a question, please press the star, then the number one key on your touch-tone telephone. Our next question comes from the line of Adam France with 1492 Capital.
Hey, good morning,
guys. Adam.
Thanks for squeezing me in here. Rick, could you give me maybe your top two areas of improvement that you need to be working on over there, and then any feel or pattern to what you're seeing out there in terms of the next set of acquisitions? Prices coming down, prices going up, is there a regional pattern? Any thoughts you can give me there would be much appreciated.
Absolutely. First of all, with regards to the business and where we need to do work, I would highlight two areas. I think just to be clear about our strategy, it's growing the institutional business, which was very new to us over the past few years and has grown substantially. It's continued organic growth through the building of, in high net worth, through the building of our brand, which I think continues to get greater visibility. And it's strategic acquisitions and hires in money center cities or areas. So that includes the Virginia market, where we already were, centered in and around Richmond, Virginia, and the greater New York area, Chicago, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Texas, perhaps Minneapolis, Florida, places like that. And we're going to execute those carefully over time. We've traditions every 2 to 3 years. It had been quite some time since we acquired an RIA when we did the Jamison acquisition. And in my last call, Adam, I mentioned that I saw the acquisition model accelerating a bit compared to Silvercrest's history. Culture is extraordinarily important to us, and we're very careful about the partners that we're going to do business with, because we want to make sure we enjoy our jobs and have fun coming into work every day, grow a great business together. In terms of that, we have a few conversations. I think I said last year that we were having more conversations than we ever had in our history. Given that we did one You can imagine there were others that fell out for
sure.
A variety of reasons. One reason sometimes is price. There are, in some areas, eye-popping numbers in terms of price that big banks and regional brokerages sometimes are willing to pay, and frankly pay on terms that don't make a lot of long-term sense from a wise use of capital return of investment, in my opinion. And that can turn heads with potential partners. I think the people that we get the furthest with and find commonality with understand the realities of the business, in that in becoming future shareholders of Silvercrest, they too are going to want us to be good stewards of capital, because if we were to come together, we will be stewards of their capital. And we have found people who are putting culture first, potential future growth opportunities first. We structure deals so that people get upside should they grow well with us. And then become a bit more reasonable around price, make for great partners. I would say the multiples have been moving up a bit over the past year, the condition of the environment we're in. But it hasn't moved so far out of reach that we can't get good deals done or have good conversations. But it is important that we not only invest our capital wisely on behalf of you and other shareholders, but that our future partners see that that's what in their best interest in the long run as well. With regards to what we work on in the business, to get to your first part of your question, having just answered your second, we've been working to expand and grow the family office service side a bit. That took a hit just before the IPO and has had some declining revenues since we've gone public. That's been talked about. I think going into the IPO was close to 10% of the revenue of the business and declined a bit. We have seen most of that behind us. There was an incremental growth in that business in the last quarter. Some of that is timing, but there is real growth there. I don't think that story is completely over, but we that's an area that I think we can grow, especially with some of the new larger high net worth clients that we've gotten recently. We have also added some new personnel in that business, and we did so I think without hurting our margins, which is good. We've made some other investments along those lines. A second area that we're focusing on a bit here is technology. We don't and can't become a technology company, but as you know, it is increasingly important in our world. And it's not just a generational thing. It doesn't matter what age you are and how much money you have, but people are becoming more and more digitally connected, and we're making meaningful investments in those areas merely to help us provide much better service to our clients. One of the key distinguishing characteristics of our firm is how we service our clients and work with them. Performance on investment capabilities can be fickle. There are periods of time where style comes in or out of favor.
Sure.
And in a world where, you know, especially in our neck of the woods, I could throw a rock and hit 50 asset management firms, one of the key market distinguishing characteristics that we can bring to the table is how we work with and service our clients. So we're great at it. We have a dedicated focus on it, but I think some investments in technology are key, and it's something that we have started to make, and we have senior people at the firm and portfolio managers very engaged in that process.
Very good. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
As a reminder, if you have a question, please press the star, then a number one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. We have a follow-up question from Mr. Michael Kim with Sandler O'Neill.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my follow-ups. Just one in terms of the equity grants, would you expect this to be sort of an annual type program where next year you would sort of continue to grant some equity?
given the amount of equity that we gave out, Michael, which was 60% of the pool, and the fact that people, whether it's an analyst like yourself or our good shareholders, have reminded us that that's meant to last 4 to 5 years, it's going to be a bit slower now that we've given out, after 2 years, a bit more than half the pool. Yes, we expect to give more out, but I think it's going to be much more sensitive and contingent on us growing the top line revenue, because we do want to maintain compensation levels at a reasonable level as compared to revenue, so that we don't depress our margins. And we think where we're at is pretty reasonable. So incremental grants are going to be closely linked to the incremental health of the revenue in the business. And going forward, not unlike what we've just done, we want to make sure that we have some real accomplishments, which should be reflected in top-line revenue before we give grants. We waited until we had a fair bit of accomplishments and proved ourselves in the marketplace. We've had a remarkable and good period of growth in a very stable business while maintaining margins, and we felt the awards were warranted. We're going to take the same attitude going forward.
Okay. And then maybe just one quick modeling one for Scott. How should we be thinking about sort of incremental expense related to the onboarding of Jamison, looking into the back half of the year and beyond, particularly as it relates to the G&A line?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the pattern nature of Jamison's expense structure is very much like ours. And from a, you know, EBITDA margin perspective, you know, I would expect as their P&L is integrated to maintain consistency there. So,
you know, Michael, this is Rick. Since I answered that valuation question before from Adam, I think it's worth mentioning that when we go into a relationship with good new partners, and boy, are our Jamison folks that came over wonderful people. They fit so well here culturally. But we work very hard with the party that we're negotiating with, a really solid agreement on what the P&L and EBITDA margins look like going forward for the business. It's not only helpful in coming up with a good price and being able to give our new partners full and fair value for their business, but it avoids any future misunderstandings and concerns and pressures if there's an earnout and some problem around what the margin contribution really is. And that's important because to the extent there's an earnout, it represents meaningful upside for our new partners should they grow the business at a good clip. And we want to make sure that they benefit from that. For growth, we're willing to pay for it, and we absolutely want our new partners to benefit. So getting that agreed to upfront is really critical, and we've been pretty good at that and have designed the acquisition prior to going into it to really being in line with our existing margins, which are hovering, you know, from the very high 20s to low 30s.
Got it. Okay. Thanks for taking my follow-up questions.
Sure. Welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Steven Schwartz with Raymond James.
Hey, guys. A couple of follow-ups. First, just on the dilution from the equity stock the stock compensation plan, Rick, that's 4 cents per – I just want to make sure that's 4 cents per quarter.
Correct.
Okay. And then one other thing on this. Is that would be an accurate statement from the expense side, but Scott, doesn't the shares go into the account immediately?
They yes, upon grant. So the and that 4 cents reflects that. That is correct.
So there's not an immediate 961,000 shares in the in the account?
When we report next period, it will be included in the adjusted diluted count.
Okay, so the dilution actually is greater than the 4 cents because of the shares that come into the denominator.
Right. But what I'm saying is that 4 cent increment factors in that your adjusted diluted share count goes up by virtue of these grants.
Okay, we can discuss that offline.
Sure.
I'm coming up with something a little bit different. And then just Rick, going back to the two sub-advisory relationships, was that small cap?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's what I wanted to know. Thanks, guys.
Sure. We do have some opportunities, Stephen, in equity income. That's been a great performing strategy for us, and there have been a couple of key potential institutions, I should say, that have approved equity income as strategies that could fund at any time. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
Okay, good.
Thank you. At this time, I'm showing no further questions. I would like to turn the call back over to Mr. Richard Huff for closing remarks.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the second quarter 2015 call. Just to conclude, as I mentioned during the business update, it was a very good quarter for the firm where we increased our discretionary assets nearly 7%, whether through a combination of very strong organic growth on both the institutional and high net worth sides or as a result of executing successfully on our acquisition strategy with the combination of Jamison and the wonderful new colleagues we have there. Just to reemphasize, we have now for 2 years been growing organically for eight straight quarters, which is 2 years, and have executed on each piece of the strategic plan we put forth for this company to shareholders. Again, building institutional growth, continued organic growth in the high net worth business, acquisitions or hiring of talented teams that culturally fit into our firm, and building and enhancing the visibility of our prestigious brand. The execution by my partners has been wonderful, and we're having a great deal of fun growing this business, and we look forward to continuing it. It's been unusually smooth. The markets have clearly been cooperating for some time, and you never know how bumpy it can get on the high net worth side, but we, as I mentioned before, have a robust pipeline in both the institutional and high net worth business areas, and we feel very good about where we're positioned now for future growth. Thank you very much for joining our call, and look forward to talking to you soon. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This does conclude the program. You may now disconnect. Have a wonderful day.